Welcome back to series 5 of the podcast. This is a short collection of interviews that I had with people during the first lockdown, with a focus and emphasis on attention, intention and distraction. Hope you enjoy them.
Thank you both very much indeed for agreeing to come on the show. Chris and Scott, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with me. So thank you very much. I'm going to pose to you because we finished series 4 actually with your episode and we talked about balance. So I'm just interested to know what's happening. You know, how's your current situation been impacting on your own balance?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jeff, because I'm slightly embarrassed to admit this in the current climate that we're in, is that it hasn't really impacted on my balance too much, to be honest. And the reason why I'm embarrassed is because it's impacted most of us. But the strange thing is that the way I live my life with my partner is we focus on having less and just having the essentials around us. So by not having the ability to hoard a load of stuff, to overshop and things like that, we already have what we need. The bit that has bit of the imbalance for me is the human touch. Being a bit of an introvert, I've been training for this for all my life. So being at home and being on my own and being in separate rooms and being away from other people is where my comfort zone is. But when I do flip into that more ambivert, extrovert stage, that's when I need to go out and speak to people, and I don't have that at the moment. So how do I try and fix that? Well, I'm still trying to figure that out. And a little bit will be a learning curve around, do I do more virtual pub quizzes? Do I do more virtual interaction at the weekend? What does my home drinking become like? Like, because you used to go out to drink in a pub. Now do I drink at home? It's a really weird, really weird thing. But our plans before this all kicked off was that we were going to sell our flat and move to the coast for it, live a little bit more simpler. And that balance is going to be completely shot now. So it's how do I deal with the stuff that I can control and the stuff that I can't control.
I love it. And as always, I love your honesty, Chris. Scott, what's been happening in terms of your balance?
Yeah, I'm pretty blessed. I live by the coast already, Chris. So we can maybe do a house swap when this is over. jumping on Chris's answer there a little bit, I wanted to, before this started, go and move to a remote island and do my work from the remote island. And I went, I probably can't do that because of the amount of face-to-face delivery that my work involves. But actually, the amount of face-to-face delivery it doesn't involve now means at the end of this I'm kind of personally placed, if I can convert my work into the way it's moving at the moment, into a space that actually gives me a better balance. Now whether to do that or not is another question, but so as my balance has been impacted in different ways that for a starting point, you know, when we get into the second to third week of March, when we're into lockdown, pretty much all clients that I had went pause. Not cancel, but pause. We don't want to do anything at the moment, but we do want to do something further on, but we're not quite sure when we want to do things. And on top of that, from a personal point of view, just again, go back to what you said there, Chris, around being made for times like this. I thought before this I was made for times like this, but I think during the first 2 weeks personally, I wasn't, because I struggled with it mentally a little bit around sometimes being quite a social animal and having on the road and working with people every day and working with audiences and actually spending time apart from my household and being on the road actually gave us a closeness when I came home. And it's not that that closeness hasn't got closer over the weeks that I've been at home, but it's just unusual for me to be at home for such an extended period of time and being involved in everything that's involved in being there. So it's given me a good openness and understanding of that. But I think I've got many of my friends are on the road because I work all over the country and when I'm on the road, I socialise lots with friends. When I'm in Liverpool or London or Leeds, I'll go and meet somebody in the evening. But I'm still making those communications and contacts, you know, via platforms like Zoom, where we're recording this evening. But I'm definitely missing the people side of it. But 2 weeks after the whole personal trauma of trying to navigate what's going on with it, I've actually had some really creative time that I've then pushed back into what's my normal state to go, well, what can I create out of this? And I've managed to develop a product in 2 weeks that I've never done before to turn it around, to get it to a point of actually launching it within the next week and a half. And I would never have thought I could have done that, because I normally take ages and procrastinate and throw ideas around, and it takes me a good 6 months to get a product to become something that I can use. So I've managed to do that in 2.5 weeks. So, but I had definitely a 2 week mental holiday, I think was the best way to describe it.
It's good listening to both of you, you know, share your honest experience of what you're going through. And sometimes there's almost this expectation that, you know, when you do, you know, face and front up with groups or with managers or leaders, which both of you do in different guises, that you'll be all right, and you'll just, you know, you're positive guys anyway, so you'll just find something that works for you. But the reality is very different for each and every one of us, and it's interesting to get those two different perspectives, because, you know, you're human as well, and this has had an impact positively and, you know, perhaps negatively, or from a learning point of view for both of you. Scott, I'm going to come back to you, because where I want to go next is understand a little bit more from both of you as to what's getting your attention the moment. And it sounds from what you've shared already that you've been able to, you know, really focus your attention on something in quite a short period of time.
I mean, I think that's been something for me to use my time productively when I've not had work. I'm starting to get some more work now that's coming back my way, but when I've not had the usual running around doing work geographically around the country, I've not had that focus to do that or even to create things. I've thought, well, I need to do something productive with my time, and that's definitely held my attention. But I think the other thing for me, aside from that, that's really important is when the last thing that I worked on as a product, and actually what the digital product became, was a product that was all about sharing your learning through kindness. And I've definitely seen a massive shift in a desire for kindness over the last 4 weeks. And it's one of those things, if you walk up to somebody and you're maybe at a checkout with them, and somebody's not got enough change to pay for the shopping, and the person behind them offers to pay for the shopping. Sometimes 5 weeks ago, that would have went, why are you doing that? But now it's kind of almost like an honest transaction that people are really welcome and open to it. So I think there's something in there in terms of what happens next after kindness, I've noticed. I made a lovely thing last week between my wife and I. We've got an elderly neighbour that lives across the road from us, and she's wonderful. She always never forgets the kids' birthdays. You know, always at Christmas time, she buys them a gift. She's just the most wonderful lady. And in the last few years, she's been through a lot of personal trauma. She lost her daughter a few years back. She's just recovered from cancer. She's had a horrible time of it. So my wife and I said, look, we need to make sure we look after Mrs. Duncan across the road from us and really help her out. And last Sunday, my wife said, why don't we make Mrs. Duncan a dinner on Sunday? Because she would never go to the effort of making a Sunday roast. And it wasn't the fact that we made the Sunday roast was the point I wanted to make. It was the fact that the way that she came to the door, she came fully dressed in her best clothes and her earrings, and had done herself up as if she was going out for a dinner, because it meant so much to her to actually get treated. And she says, I'm dressing up, I'm looking good for the occasion. And we put the tray on our garden wall with a flower in it and everything, handed over the wall to her. And by the time the dessert came, she'd written a thank you note and actually put it under the plate and washed all the dishes and given us it back to her again. So I think kindness has been so amplified, and that's been so needed in business as well, that the gestures and the conversations, and even the clients that have said to me, we need to delay work, the amount of conversations they've had with me around when they want to delay it till, having check-in points, checking in actually just to see if you're okay.
Yeah.
For me, kindness has been amplified, and that's definitely held my attention more than anything at the moment.
Brilliant. Chris, you're nodding, smiling away. What's been grabbing your attention?
Well, other than Scott's neighbour.
Mrs. Duncan.
Yeah, Mrs. D. Mrs. D in her Sunday best. Very similar to Scott, actually, because when you mentioned about kindness, I actually wrote that down as something to touch on. So I'm glad you referenced it first. So I'll speak into that first, because my bit of exercise is to take the dog out for the walk. Bless her, she's had more exercise than she has over the last year or so. But dog walkers are a strange breed. We tend to say a wave or a hello to each other across the road. But obviously when you live in London, us Londoners don't particularly necessarily be as friendly as the rest of the country. But I would echo what Scott's saying around that I've seen people be a little bit more subtly happy to see each other across the road, and people that I'm seeing regularly every morning or every afternoon, you know, just give you a wave, "Hi, doing all right?" In a typical British fashion, you know, not overexerting themselves, just the nod or the smile. Other than that, I mean, what has been grabbing my attention is I've been really, really interested in the behaviour of groups of people during this time. So I love to analyse behaviour and people generally in certain situations. And this is a perfect time for that. And I've seen different people react in different ways. And I've noticed that some have become really creative, like Scott's reference, and creating a new product. And others have almost regressed a little bit and are waiting on the next instruction. So they're waiting to be told what to do next. And they're the two different types of people that I'm seeing in a work-based environment and in personal life as well. They're waiting, and some are just cracking on and almost thriving rather than surviving. So they're the two different types of people that are coming to my attention right now. And how do I balance dealing with these different types of people? But yeah, it's just interesting what this crisis is. Shined a light on what can be achieved, stuff that would have taken years to achieve is now being done in a matter of weeks. So it makes you question things quite seriously. Is that, what were we doing beforehand that took things, you know, took so long to make lots and lots of departments work from home? You know, it could be done now quite easily. So that's what's grabbing my attention at the moment, Jeff.
It's good again to hear both similar thoughts but also different thoughts, and you're right in terms of kindness. And you know, we're seeing, as Kirsty Mack says, you know, we're seeing the best and the worst of people right now, and I think we're probably seeing more of the best, although the worst is still there and will always be there. But those acts of kindness it fills you with warmth and makes you think that actually, you know, whatever happens when we come out of this, you know, we can use that almost as a foundation and a bedrock to move forward. Aside from the things that are getting your attention, I'm also wanting to explore, you know, what's distracting you, you know, because again, you know, I'm seeing lots of different things, I'm hearing lots of different things as I speak to other people, to friends, to family, to peers, to colleagues, and what have you. What's happening in terms of your distractions, and what are you allowing to you know, yourself to be distracted by during this time? Chris, I'm going to come to you first because I've got an inkling that I know what you might share.
we'll see. Generally, I don't get distracted too much. So again, this has been a little bit of a change to actually willingly accept distraction into my life. So being a minimalist, I'm not immune to it. Again, being completely honest, the dog has been a distraction. So she has almost had a bit of a sixth sense around maybe the situation, the social anxiety, that my partner's been quite ill that we believed that she had coronavirus, had all the symptoms. So Daisy, the dog, could sense that. So she was spending more time in bed. And as the days and weeks have gone on, Daisy now believes it's her bed. So when we go to bed in the evening, she's already here. She's already on the bed waiting for us. And then previously, we would have told her to go away and go back into her own bed in the front room. But now we are almost embracing this distraction so we can have our little cozy trio, the three of us, just laying on the bed and being comfortable with each other. But that also means I get distracted at 4 a.m. when she is dreaming about chasing the squirrel. And she's kicking me. And then she also distracts me at 6 a.m. or any time that, you know, the sun rises, when she gets off the bed and then stares at me to get her breakfast. So it is interesting where I'm not being distracted by work. I am allowing this distraction to just take its course and embracing it, really. And I'm really enjoying that particular distraction where it's kind of led to, bless her, and it's almost allowed me to connect closer to the three of us. So that's what we get out of it, a lot of comfort between the three of us.
I love it. And the reason I asked the question, I'm going to ask it to Scott in a moment, is often we think of distraction as being a negative thing and something that we ought to kind of reduce in our waking life. But actually, what you've just described there is a beautiful distraction. And I'm sure there's lots of other people up and down the country that are also doing something similar and allowing, you know, pets or animals to distract them in a positive way. Scott, what about you? What are you allowing yourself to be distracted by?
I think I've been on this, a distractathon.
Explain.
I love getting distracted. I you know, daydreaming is like a skill and a craft to me. It's a choice. I choose to daydream and I choose to get distracted sometimes because I just quite enjoy the playful nature of getting lost in things. And I think I was watching a TED talk a few weeks ago and it was Amy Mullins that was on it. She was talking about daydreaming being the bridge between imagination and creation. Is that you have to get yourself lost in a space sometimes. So I'm kind of choosing my distractions a little bit more rather than just allowing myself to drift. So I know that, for example, that there's more and more virtual communication being done. But when you're working with customers, one wants to use Zoom, one wants to use Skype, one wants to use WebEx, one wants to use Teams. So you kind of got to get distracted and have some playtime in all of those platforms. So I've been kind of distracted and just having a go at all different things that I haven't used before in some of those functions and just playing with stuff and creating problems and errors in it and just trying different things out. The other thing I've done is a deliberate distraction is I moved the hammock that was into the garden up next to my office. So I can actually lie outside in the hammock and look up at the clouds and actually get some thinking time. And there's another serious reason why I did that is for the first couple of weeks I went to a bit of an isolation because I'm diabetic myself. So when the government first announced about risk factors, you know, I was classified as high risk. Now, I know you can't see this in video camera, what a slender, fit gentleman I am. but the chances of being high risk is probably low risk of a high risk category. But as I said, I wanted to try and get fit during that. And again, I run probably twice a week and cycle once a week, but I've not done any exercise outdoors. But I've ran or cycled practically every day since lockdown. I've lost a stone in weight.
Wow.
So that distraction's been a real positive that's had some real good health benefits to keep myself physically fit as well as mentally fit and things as well. And the final distraction's American Pickers. I cannot stop watching it. It's a show I used to watch occasionally. But I've actually found an element in it that is absorbing me. And it's one of the presenters, a guy called Mike Wolfe, whose kindness and appreciation for other human beings makes the show worthwhile. And if you watch anyone else in the show, no one gets the level of appreciation that he does. That I've actually seen, you know, older couples that have been crying as he's left their house because he's appreciated so much looking after the possessions. As they take those possessions and reposition them to sell them onto another market because he really appreciates people. So I think I've been looking for the kindness and all of those distractions that have been doing it. But I know that's quite a leap between a hammock and American pickers, but it's given me a focal point and amongst all my distractions, because as I said, it's a bit of a pastime for me.
I knew we'd there you go, Jeff. There's your next guest, the American Pickers guy.
Yeah, Mike Wolf. You need to get Mike Wolf on your podcast, definitely.
I love it. Love it. The final area I want to explore with you both is intention. So, how are you using this time to be a little bit more intentional? Well, perhaps you're not. Chris, we'll come back to you. How are you using this time?
Yeah. So, been super intentional recently. So. As you know, it's writing a book at the moment. It's still untitled, but it is a story of the last kind of 5-6 years of my journey into understanding about minimalism and living with less. And it's been really cathartic to write that story and just sit with my memories and almost pick them apart and relive those memories, but pick out all the learnings as well. And it's a really good way of looking back and reflecting on how much I've grown as an individual and writing this book. So yeah, so every morning I'll try and take the dog out for a walk, do at least 30 minutes of writing. Sometimes I have less words than I had the night before, but it's just part of the process. And then during the weekends, when generally I'd be out socializing, I now spend similar to Scott, a little bit just in my head, daydreaming to a certain extent to kind of how is this best going to lay out as a story that's not going to impact the quality or the authenticity of the actual true fact that happened. So yeah, so writing a lot more, being more proactive in regards to reaching out to other minimalists across the world and just figuring out how do they live life, how are they adjusting to the various things that are happening in the world. So writing for me at the moment, Jeff, has been very intentional. It's gone up a notch, as in the volume, maybe not the quality.
You're just being hard on yourself. Brilliant. Scott, for you, how are you using this time to be intentional?
I've been reading a lot, in particular a lot of positive psychology, because I think it's a really important space to get your head into at the moment as well, and at any moment, but in particular when there's tough times in front of you and how to do that. And I was looking Sonia Libby-Muskie's model about the happiness pie of intention, and she reckons that only 10% of that happiness pie circumstances, 50 is your kind of genetic set point, and 40% of it is actually the intention that you've got some control over. So if you think about it, some people don't use the capacity of that 40% in any given moment. So try and focus when you have got quiet time to try and do the most powerful and useful things you can do with it. So it made me also think that not everyone's got the same circumstances in the same genetic set point. So even in my household, from, you know, my kids presumably have got a similar genetic set point, but my wife won't, and my friends and extended family won't, because they've been brought up by, you know, different parents and different siblings, etc. as well. So everyone needs a different level of support and a different level of conversation. So I've definitely been making time to have the right conversations with the right people at the right times to make sure my intention is right. And a slightly different point, or a radically different point, I've been mastering crackers and how to make crackers, because it's something I've never made before.
Christmas and crackers.
No, like crackers for
Christmas. Jacob's crackers.
It's not something I've ever tried to make before. But I kind of got into a habit of mastering bread before this, and I got quite far down the bread route. And then my wife made the most amazing loaf one day and had a bread off with me, and I felt really disheartened because she made a better loaf than I had. You know, I'd been feeding my sourdough for 2.5 years. He's even got a name, he's called Yeasty Boy. and she outdated me without the use of Yeastie Boy, and I was deflated. So I've now moved on to crackers because she hasn't yet made a cracker. But no doubt I'll get up tomorrow morning. She'll have mastered crackers far better than me, and we'll have a cracker off next week. But I think on those two points, the intention is to understand more about each person's kind of genetic set point and understand what they're doing with their intentions and trying to encourage people to do the right things in the right ways. And on the other side of things, that baking point I know is bordering in humour, but I just think it's important to spend time doing the stuff that you love doing that you never get the time to do. And I love being in the kitchen. Kitchen's my books, I put music on, it's my relaxation time as kids go to bed at night, and I put the cooker on at 10 o'clock and there's normally something coming out of the oven at midnight, because that's when I get my space to relax. I don't watch TV in the evening. I don't watch a lot of movies. I listen to music and bake and cook, because that's my intention. And if I can do that to use it for other people, that when they're maybe going through a hard time at the moment, if they get the mail the next day and there's a box of cookies in the post for them, just to cheer them up a little bit, then I think that's a nice intention to have.
I love it. And for both of you, there's something there around either doing or learning or just applying, you know, your mind and your energy during this period of time. And I know through speaking to both of you, it's not just this period of time. You will have been doing these things before, you know, the virus came into play and lockdown and those types of things. But what I've loved hearing from you both is that you're trying different things and you're having a go at the same time, trying to, you know, get your head around where we are in the world. And, you know, Chris, what you talked a little bit about earlier on, some of those models and ways of working that we've been given and we've inherited all of a sudden have gone out the window. And some of the things that we have heard organizations say, well, we can't do that because of this, actually it's now happening because of that. So it's fascinating. The final thing that I'm gonna ask each of my guests, and you've got a choice here, you don't have to make a commitment, but I'm looking to see, you know, if you were to spend 1% of your day, and that works out to be approximately 14.4 minutes of your day, if you were to spend 1% of your day in the coming weeks and months doing something different, what would that be? Scott, I'll put you on the spot.
Something that I've been wanting to do for a long time that I haven't done is I bought a lovely stationery pack about 6 months ago with 25 notelets in it. And the best way I could describe them was peacock. They're kind of purple and teal, but peacock probably summarizes them better than anything. And they've sat on my desk for months. And I said that at some point I'm going to write letters of appreciation to people and just post them out in this lovely notepaper and handwrite them to people. And just send them a note for thank you. So I think given the amount of support that I've had over, you know, the last 4 or 5 weeks when, you know, I've been trying to shift my business mentally, I've been struggling at times, you know, I've been trying to change the way I do things and, you know, adjust to the thing that we're adjusting to at the moment. I'd like to repay that in appreciation. As much as random acts of biscuit is one way of doing that, I think writing them a letter, it's a lovely way to get an appreciation, because as I said earlier about Mrs. Duncan, when she sent me that letter and folded it under the plate when she handed it back, that kindness gesture felt to me hopefully the same way that the meal felt to her, because it melted my heart when I read it and how lovely it was written and the words she chose and the language she used to describe how much it meant to her to get her dinner made for her. So I'm going to take Mrs. Duncan's role and actually start writing some letters to people to appreciate them for what they've done.
Fabulous. I can see you doing it as well. Chris, what about you?
Oh, how am I supposed to follow that? I don't know. Just adopt a load of lost puppies. I don't know. I think firstly, if I can spend 14.4 minutes not thinking about chocolate, then that would be a win for me.
That sounds easier than writing the letters, by the way.
I mean, if I was to go back to the distraction bit, bloody chocolate, my God, my snacking has gone through the roof. But yeah, I suppose something I could do differently is last year I was really into like just working out at home. So I do a lot of push-ups in the morning and some yoga and things like that. And I was really into it. And then just life stuff got in the way, and I put other priorities above those. So I walked longer and I did more running. So I did more kind of cardio stuff. And I've almost forgotten how to do a proper push-up now. So I think if I was to spend the next few days, weeks and months, 14 minutes, I think it'd be doing some push-ups again in the morning and just learning, relearning how to use those muscles again that I've not used for a while.
There we go. Press-ups and letter writing. Scott and Chris, thank you very much indeed for, you know, agreeing to come on the show and sharing some of your thoughts at this moment in time around attention, intention, and also distraction. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend a little bit of time with you. So thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jeff. Cheers.